everything just happened so fast between getting called up, you know, being this like so-called savior of a, you know, an amazing franchise and putting that weight on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But pitching in the All-Star game at home was, I mean,
wild.
Yeah. Just something you never even thought of dreaming of.
Hello, everyone. We're back here at Club 30, coming to you from New York City. I'm Henrik Lundqvist, your host.
I'm Jay Liddell, Hank's co-host.
Co-host.
Yeah.
And friend for, what, the past 17 years?
I think that was last year, maybe 18? 18.
Yeah, 18 years. Still going strong.
Yeah. Speaking of long friendships, today's guest, we've both known him for more than a decade now, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt Harvey, former MLB star pitcher for the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
What a journey he had.
Yeah.
I remember when we started to get to know him a little bit. It was the start of his career.
Right at the beginning.
Right in the beginning. And then All-Star Game, World Series. I mean, he really took the city by storm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great. We have this opportunity to sit down now and reflect a little bit of his career. And just like me, he is moving on to new things, next chapter.
That's
retired
right.
Last year from baseball.
Yeah. What do you think makes this episode a success, given that we know him so well? What's the angle?
Well, again, I thought about this coming here. I didn't grow up watching baseball. I never played baseball. But I'm very curious of the position, being a pitcher.
Yeah.
Because of the mental strategy, but the mechanics as well.
Yeah.
So I want to get into that a little bit. The specifics of being a pitcher in baseball. We have to remember, too, we have a lot of listeners back in Sweden. I don't think they watch a ton of baseball. So
yeah, maybe it'll be a good education for them.
Exactly.
I think if we can get something new, you know, if I learn something about Matt, that's a success. Because we've hung out so many times that, you know, you think you know everything about somebody, but let's see.
Let's see if we can find something that interests us.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. Well, should we bring the Dark Knight in here?
We should. He's a former MLB All-Star. He led the Mets to their first World Series in 15 years. Welcome to Club 30, our good friend, the Dark Knight of Gotham, Matt Harvey.
Hey. What's up?
Happy to be here.
Happy to have you, brother.
It's awesome. Hey, let's start right away. The Dark Knight. What a sick nickname. Yeah. What comes to mind when you hear me say The Dark Knight?
Probably the Sports Illustrated article. I think that's kind of when it started. And Tom Verducci wrote the article. I don't know exactly where he came up with the name, but I think to have that in New York City, I think it's probably up there with one of the best.
It's got to be top.
You know, honored to have it. I think my nieces and nephews definitely got a better kick out of it than I did when I was growing up. But, you know, I think it's cool to have now that I'm retired.
How fast did it catch on? Like, when did you realize when people like walking by on the street, like, hey, the Dark Knight, like how quickly after that article did it feel like, okay, I guess this is my nickname now?
It was pretty quick. Like you said, I think that was probably the biggest time is when that article came out and I was, you know, people were screaming from the other side of the street and you're walking down a street in New York and you're like, what, you know, what's going on here? Like, how does that pick up that quick? And it's New York City, you know, and you're like kind of, it's kind of a surreal moment when people are screaming at you from across the street.
Yeah.
And you know, growing up in a small town like Mystic, Connecticut, and then playing at North Carolina and then coming here to New York and having that happen pretty quickly. It was a pretty incredible moment.
2012, that's when you entered MLB, pitched your first game. How was your mindset going into that? Like going from college to minors and then making that big step into MLB, was there any adjustments? How was your mindset, you know, going into the big leagues?
Well, I think at North Carolina, we had it a little bit different because we went to the College World Series 2 years in a row. And out there in Omaha, you're pitching in front of 30,000 already. I mean, it's not Major League Baseball, but it's still, you know, you kind of get a taste of I guess the big league life when you're going out there at the College World Series. And, you know, only played in the minor leagues for 1 year, I guess just over a year. So it was, you didn't really have time to think about it. I was moving from high A to double A pretty quickly, finished the year in double A, my first full season of minor league baseball. And then the next year I played 2.5 months in triple A, and then I was in the big leagues. So You really didn't, I didn't have time to sit with it and I guess kind of sulk in the minor league system.
I guess that's almost better, right? When you don't think about it too much.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, minor league life is not easy. It's not, you know, those guys aren't making a ton of money. They're not getting the best food, and you're on a bus for hours and hours and hours and, you know, crushing beers at night and not getting the best sleep on a bus and trying to go play the next day. It's not the...
Is it the same amount of games in the minors?
I think it's maybe 20 less or so. So okay. Like, instead still of 162, it's 140.
140.
And
yeah.
At what age did you realize, okay, I do have a special talent, and you went from dreaming about making it to MLB to more like realistically think this is happening? How old were you?
I've had this conversation with my dad quite a bit, and I think he kind of knew that I was special was my freshman year of high school. There was a playoff game, and I think he was scared shitless that I was pitching in this playoff game against one of the better teams in our league, in our division, filled with juniors and seniors who were all going to pretty good colleges. And here I am, you know, whatever you are in freshman of high school, 14, 15 years old, and went out and started the game and ended up pitching pretty well and you know, creeping into the higher 80s speed-wise. And I think there was a bases-loaded situation where we had two outs, full count, and I dropped in a curveball at 14, 15 years old against, you know, one of the better teams in Connecticut and struck the guy out. And that's when my dad was kind of like, ooh, You know, that doesn't come along too often that a 14, 15-year-old's dropping a curveball in 3-2 with the bases loaded to strike someone out. That was when he knew, and then I guess I started picking up on it, you know, shortly after that.
But was that a moment for you as well? He realized that, but could you feel, okay, I can do it at this level, at this age?
I think looking back now, I probably did. I think when I really did personally was when I started getting invited to a lot of tournaments, whether it was in Florida or a couple of tournaments in California, and you really got to see, you know, those kids play all year round. I'm Mystic, Connecticut. It's 30, 40 degrees, and
right.
I'm worried about going skiing if it's snowing. You know, these kids are playing 100 games a year, and they're men at 16 years old, you know, they have different training, they have different programs, and so started going to those tournaments and actually performing pretty well. Speed started ticking up, you know, started striking guys out and getting a lot more notoriety from colleges, from pro scouts, from agents, you know, that really, really kind of took off and became real at that point. I would say around sophomore year of high school.
Oh, wow.
I want to get into the specifics a little bit, how you train. Again, growing up in Sweden, didn't watch a ton of baseball, never really played baseball, but to become a really good pitcher, like if you break it down, the mechanical, the technical, if you will, and the mental and physical aspect of it, like how do you train? What's more important? Can you take us through that a little bit?
I think early in your career or growing up stages, it's finding the right trainers, finding the right mechanics for you, what works for your body. I think there's so many new things out there that show what specific workouts and training programs you need for what your body can handle. And when we were younger and growing up, it was kind of just one specific training program for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that may not have worked for me at the time, or maybe that's why I got hurt or whatnot. But, you know, you can't look back on stuff like that. But
you're a pretty big guy. Like you're, what, 6'3",
6'4", 220, 225. But I was playing, when I was at my best, I was playing 250.
250. Okay, so that was going to be my next question. Yeah. Like, do you need weight to be a good pitcher? Do you use your body weight to get force behind the ball or not really? Do you be a lightweight and be a great pitcher?
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of guys that are you know, that are on the thinner side who throw mid to upper 90s and can last the entire game throwing that speed. I don't know, for some reason it was easy for me to be very strong and put weight on and throw harder throughout the game. But, you know, now that I can barely walk because I have arthritis in my knee, I wish I was a little bit lighter.
And that's because of the rotation when you pitch?
Yeah. I use my legs a lot. So it was, you know, and I, what they call is like, I kind of hooked the rubber. Basically, my foot was on the ground as long as it possibly could while my knee and body was rotating towards home plate. And it just put so much pressure on your knee. And, you know, that's really the only thing that kind of held me back from playing the last couple of years. You know, you brought up the mental approach to sports. And when you have injuries and you know you can't perform the way you used to, it takes a big toll on you. Mm-hmm. So,
and if we look at the amount of pitches, I actually had to write it down because there were so many different pitches. So you have four-seam, two-seam, cutter, splitter. You have forkball. You have curveball, slider, slurve, screwball, changeup, palm ball, circle, changeup. What?
That's not me personally. That's
for baseball.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For you, like your go-tos, what areas did you dominate? But can you just again, we have a lot of Swedes listening. I have no idea what I just said, but can you take us through a little bit what that means?
Yeah, I mean, it's different, just different movements, different speeds, different grips for each. But, you know, for me, when I was at my best, it was fastball, slider, changeup, and occasionally curveball. Hmm. But I was throwing my slider at 92, 93 miles per hour when my fastball was upper 90s, so it was... I kind of joke with people when I was at my best, it was like playing a video game. You know, I could literally throw the fastball, throw the slider wherever I wanted and in any count. And I knew how to throw it in the zone. I knew how to throw it out of the zone. And it was fun.
And is that a rarity for like a branded fastball pitcher to have those other two pitches in his arsenal?
I'd say back then. Yeah. You know, and it was not too long ago. It was 13, 14 years ago when I started, or 12 years ago when I started. And, you know, there weren't too many starters that were throwing up near 100 mm-hmm. throughout the entire game, mm-hmm. mixing in a low 90s off-speed pitch.
Yeah.
And now you watch a game and it's like 80, 90% of the guys are doing that. But I think it's also causing a lot of guys to get hurt mm-hmm. and not be on the field as much as possible. Yeah. So
you guys both played probably the highest pressure position in your sports, right? Where like you couldn't individually win a game, but you could certainly be responsible for losing it.
I watched plenty of Hank's games.
When I was winning. Yeah, of course.
But that is
I always watched my I always came when you were winning. Yeah. It seemed like every game you won, everybody had a shutout. So it was always fun coming to the guard.
But how is that approach like that's a different approach than the rest of the guys in the locker room around you, you know? Like going into a game knowing that you have to prevent a loss rather than be responsible for the win.
Yeah.
Like how does that change your focus before?
Well, I would say and we talk a lot about this on this show, that where you're at mentally, being able to make those right decisions, because technically and physically, I think everybody's a little bit different, but kind of on the level field, what makes the difference is the mental aspect. Are you able to make the right decisions under pressure? And sure. I felt like that was the big difference so many nights, you know? When you were in the zone, it was so mm-hmm. much easier to make the right read and to stay confident and to overcome the different challenges you face throughout the game. But I think the big difference, though, for me and Matt, like I could only react. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was sometimes a little jealous of like
sure.
the pitcher. Right. You're in charge. You dictate. Like you decide where this is going because you're holding the ball. Mm-hmm. I was just waiting for it to come at me, you know? So I always reacted to everything in front of me. So
well, if you're a pitcher, you don't want to react to things. That means you're getting the balls coming at you and
you're gonna get hit, right?
Yeah.
So what's your plan going into a game? Like what's prep like?
I think and you can talk to a lot of pitchers, and you know, this is kind of an old school mentality, but I heard this from a young age from, you know, one of my mentors and sports psychologist is play a game within a game when you're out there, and you don't look at the total outcome of your start. Because if you say, hey, you know, we've only put up two runs, I got to keep runs off the board, I got to keep guys off the, you know, off the bases, and you start getting in your, then you lose your mental focus on what your job is, and you have one pitch at a time. And I know this is kind of a repetitive talk that many pitchers have, but it's true. Like you have to go out there and you have to focus on each pitch at each time, because if you look ahead, or if you look at what you just did, then you're already probably 15 to 20% less focused or less aggressive on the next pitch because you're not fully focused. And if you can go out there, the games and the years that I had that were the best, it was like I can almost go back and tell you every pitch I threw, almost every game, every at bat, just because I was that focused on each pitch.
Every pitch was the most important pitch.
It was the most important.
Yeah.
Because if you start realizing that, you know, if I'm not focused or aggressive on this pitch,
yeah,
it's in the seats, or I'm reacting to it because it's back at me,
yeah,
which is not what you want. I found that if I was super focused on each pitch, even when I made a mistake, there was aggression behind it, and guys would either foul it off, they would miss it, they would take it, and it could be right down the middle, and I'm letting it go, and I'm going, oh, shit, like that's either gone or at me, and guy can do damage. Mm-hmm. When you're hesitant on that pitch, you're not as aggressive. That's when your neck hurts because you're turning around all the time to see where it goes.
What would the best hitters do to counter that?
I had a lot of, like, when I was at my best, and it wasn't the power hitters that I really had trouble with. It was the guys that kind of slapped around, caused me to have 15 pitches before there was even an out in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking up, I'm sweating, and there's there's one out in the game. I got 15 pitches, and then I got to go face the second guy to try and get him out, you know.
Yeah.
Those guys are the tough ones. When you make a really good pitch and they're not trying to do too much and they just slap it, and then your pitch count gets up, you get a little tired, you get a little frustrated, and you start getting off your game.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the tough ones.
Yeah. You have a scouting report on each hitter?
Yep. So there's and obviously technology's gotten so much better. So now it's versus writing in a notebook what you've done to guys previously or in spring training. Yeah. Or what you've seen on you know, TV or whatnot, you know, now you can, now every pitcher's got an iPad, and you can literally just like press on a certain guy's name and you get 30 at bats against 15 different pitchers that look almost like, that have similar stuff to you, to what you have.
Wow.
Which I was, you know, writing in a little black book when I was first started playing and trying to figure out from there. But
and looking back at, okay, so 2012, great start. You have a big injury, need surgery. You miss entire 2014. Then you come back in 15, comeback player of the year. You reach the World Series. Take us through that year, coming back from a long, you know, long break.
It was a kind of an unexpected year. You know, I didn't really know. Obviously, mentally, I knew I was in a good shape. I was in a good position. As an athlete, like, you know, when do you have a full year to just train, really focus on getting your shoulder right, getting your mobility right, getting your hips right, getting, you know, really having that much time? Because, you know, honestly, a major league offseason is really 3 months if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You end in October, you usually would take mostly all of October off, maybe start up a little bit in November, and then you have December and January, and spring training starts in February.
Right.
So there was a big period between the surgery, having the year off. I tried to come back that year, and they called me crazy and, you know, told me to slow down and spend the off season to, you know, take a little time off, like a normal off season, and then get back into it. But I think spring training in 2015, we had a special team and we knew that. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of picked up where I left off from 2013, and it was pretty much smooth sailing since then.
The timeline was called up in 2012.
Yep.
That's when we met. 2013, you start the All-Star game.
Yep.
At Citi Field.
At Citi Field.
Yeah. Tommy John. Like, what did that feel like when, you know, you're off to the races, you hit, you're like, my dream has come true. I'm the best pitcher in baseball. Yeah. And then all of a, like right away, it's, you
well,
have
I think
the most.
We were all at the ESPYs together, I think in what, 12 or 13, something
yeah,
like
that.
Right. You just showed me a picture from, what was it? Nobu, I think.
Yeah. Nobu Malibu.
No, it was kind of a blur, I guess you'd say, like at that time. Everything just happened so fast between getting called up, you know, being this like so-called savior of a, you know, an amazing franchise and putting that weight on your head, on your shoulders.
Yeah.
And, but pitching in the All-Star game at home was, I mean,
wild.
Yeah. Just something you'd never even thought of dreaming of, you know. That was a pretty surreal year. When I talk about playing a video game, that was like from the first pitch of that year to the obviously the Tommy John issue. That was it was
was that like a ton of bricks because you had so much momentum?
Yeah, and it was also different too. It was it wasn't as common.
Mm-hmm.
So when that came out, it was like oh man, like
it's an ender.
Yeah, it's an ender, or you know, maybe contracts are off the table, or you know, with the whole year off, you never know what the guy's going to be like when he comes back.
Totally.
Or you know, now it's like guys are getting it done left.
Well,
and
I think you were the first person to come back stronger. You know, and I remember talking to you in 2014 where you're like, "No, I have a bionic arm."
Right.
You know.
Dr. Andrews did my surgery down in Florida, and he, you know, obviously with Tommy John, they go in, they cut out a ligament either in your hamstring or in your forearm, in your wrist. And he's like, yours was so long that I could wrap it three times in your elbow. He goes, if that thing snaps, and he's this, you know, very Southern guy. He's like, that thing snaps. He goes, I don't know what I'm doing. So, you know, that gave me a lot of confidence as well. And then, you know, honestly, since then, I never had an elbow injury or even pain or tightness or anything like that. So it wasn't the elbow that caused the issues.
Yeah, so. All right, so back to 2015, you know, make it through NLDS into the World Series.
That was one of those series you play a team like that, and they were just, they were grooving. They were hot.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of going their way. I mean, they were a very talented team, but I think on book with the starting rotation that we had, and you know, some of the lineup, David Wright, Cespedes, you know, Daniel Murphy was like the hottest hitter of all time that series. So it was a tough loss for sure.
Yeah.
Especially after what we did to you know, to LA and the Cubs, it was a tough one.
Yeah, I just remember, and I think a lot of New Yorkers in Game 5. The place was pandemonium, and Matt gets through eight clean, right? And, it, you know, obviously everybody's expecting closers to come out. And then the camera catches Harv and Terry Collins in the dugout arguing. And I would love to just – can you just give us a recap of that conversation and what you said?
Honestly, the game felt like it lasted 10 minutes. I mean, it was absolutely insane to be out there. I know some games where you feel like you're just – you're so locked in that it goes by like that.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I thought it was the seventh inning. When I came out and you know, when you're that locked in, it just, time was going by really fast.
Yeah.
Although when I was out there, it was slow, but you know, time was, and I got in and Dan Worthen came up to me and he's like, Harv, he's like, you're done. And I said, what? And I'm done. I was like, Dan, it's the seventh inning. He's like, Harv, look at the scoreboard. And I look up and I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, I just pitched eight innings. I was like, I can't get taken out of this game right now. I was like, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. Like, what are you doing? And I mentally, like, I was prepared like it was the seventh inning, like going out for the eighth. That little bit of doubt, like I talked about earlier, that little second of like, oh man, that little oh man thought where you're like, you know, it is the ninth. Now I'm fighting for it. Now I've really got to go out and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that little bit, I think was what kind of altered the ultra focus of what happened in the first eight innings. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you get fired up where you want to do everything you can to win and be out there and finish what you started. Do I think that if no one had said a word to me and just let it go and let me run back out there, the emotions would have been a little bit less. The focus would have still been up there. And that game might have been different, but, you know.
And I remember, well, I was there watching, and exactly what you're saying. You know, a thing like that, a conversation like that, changes your inner flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't, but in that moment, I could almost feel it. Like, it was obviously a huge moment in the game, mm-hmm. but you're so locked in, and then something happens with a conversation like that kind of takes you out of it.
Yeah. It makes a thing out of it.
Well, and you have to fight to get back in.
It's like they talk about it, you know, I don't know if it's the same with being a goalie, but... You know, if you have a shutout, you don't say, this guy's got a shutout.
Right.
Or if you have a no-hitter, you don't say, this guy's, hey, buddy.
Yeah.
Look at, you got a no-hitter going. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of, not saying I had a no-hitter or anything, but, you know, when you go 8 shutout in a World Series and you went through the 8th inning pretty easily, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking back, it's,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying that things were right or wrong. Obviously, we lost the game and it still haunts me, but. Whether there was a conversation or not, I think if there wasn't, things may have been different.
Mm-hmm.
They still may have ended up the same way, but in my mind, that's kind of where I was at, and still at, I guess you could say.
Yeah, no, but I could feel it especially as a goalie. That I mean, I even like coaches talking to me between periods, like I'm doing my thing.
Right.
Yeah.
A goalie coach for all these years, we never had a conversation between peers, really.
Yeah.
Once in a while, but for the most part, don't talk to me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm locked in what I need to do, and too many conversations or too many things outside of that will take me out of that comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah.
So
I always wondered that with you, like when you go in between, you know, in between periods, you're in your locker. Is there anyone talking to you? Because it seemed like you were so focused all the time.
I was in my head. Like, rarely I'd have conversations. I had a lot of years where I was very quiet game day and afternoon. Yeah, so I actually thought about it some days. Like, I wonder how many words I've said today. Like, I was just constantly thinking about my game or what's coming up here. And so it's kind of nice to talk a little bit more these days.
Yeah, no. You're making up for it now. You can't shut this guy up anymore.
Yeah.
Well, just to put a cap on that game 5, you know, I almost think that like what you showed to New York that night, it made you more than a baseball player like at that moment, because every New Yorker saw like what they would have, you know, done. Like, I'm on a heater. Like, I'm putting my foot down and I'm getting back out there. And I think that was the...
It was that, and it was, you know... The whole thing with the innings limit, you know, obviously that was a tough moment in that season where, you know, again, I was, I don't know, 26 years old and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've never been on a playoff run, you know, and I think a lot of the guys hadn't either.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want to be out there and do everything you can for your teammates and for the city and for all the fans. And I didn't have a big contract. I wasn't making a ton of money, and I'm thinking about my future family and thinking about myself, and
mm-hmm.
So is my agent. And you know, you kind of get, you know, in a big, you know, back and forth on what's right, what you should do for yourself, you know, career wise and financial wise, you know, it becomes tough. But obviously, being out there and being in the playoffs.
We're talking about how many pitches you should throw throughout the season. There's a count for all the Swedes listening.
So after a full year off and after having a big surgery like that, there was, you know, some doctor talks about 175, 180 innings being the very max innings that you should throw that year. I think after the World Series, it was close to 230 that I threw. So, you know, almost 50 innings more than recommended. So it was a year that I, you know, really put everything out there,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't take that back because I've always loved New York. I still live in New York. I wanted to win that year real bad, and you know, something I I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you grew up in Connecticut, but you spent a lot of time here. Even after, so you left the Mets in 2018.
I think this has been out there, so I don't really worry about saying it, but I grew up a Yankee fan, so it's not like new news. But, you know, we would come down to the city quite a bit. You know, we were about two and a half hours away, and, you know, we'd come down to Subway Series mostly every time we had Yankee tickets, that it was Yankees Mets. And, you know, for me, growing up in the Northeast, especially where we did, it was – I only knew baseball where it was either the Yankees versus Mets or the Yankees versus the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
And the town that I grew up in was mostly pretty much half, I'd say half and half Boston, half and half, you know, the Yankees. And I remember coming down when I was really young, and even now, like, I get anxiety when I go to Times Square and I'm looking around. I don't travel over above 14th Street a whole often, but I remember coming down when I was young and being like, I don't know if I could handle this. This is like too much.
Yeah.
Scary as a kid. But then my sister and brother-in-law took me to the West Village when I was, you know, in college. And I was like, this is New York City. I was like, are we still in Manhattan?
Right.
And, you know, that's really when I fell in love with it. We went down there and we had a margarita and I was like, I like this place.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah. One good margarita and a good location, and you have.
But you was it hard to in 2018 to leave? What was your emotions like?
I mean, I never wanted to leave. I think that was the thing. But, you know, I think, you know, after my thoracic outlet surgery, that was when I really knew physically that I just wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the more, it felt like the more that I trained, the more that I tried, the worse that the post-injury effects would kind of kick into gear. My shoulders got really tight. You know, the more I lifted, the more I tried to do, you know, posterior cuff band work and all of this, it was, things would just tighten up. And when you try and do more and it's making you worse,
yeah.
That's when it was like a spiral. Man, this is not good. And obviously, some of the off field stuff kind of crept in at that point. You know, when you don't feel like you can perform the way you used to and the way you want to, then the mental health comes in, and then it becomes tough. Then you try and, I always tell people, trying to find things that you're good at, and clearly I could go out and put the best of them and have fun. So
what do you feel when you think back of your time with the Mets? What do you feel? Do you feel like, do you get a smile on your face? Do you feel pride, any regrets? Like, when you look back at the years, I mean, you had such an impact on baseball in New York. And again, we started the show with the nickname, the Dark Knight.
Yeah, yeah.
But what do you feel?
Obviously, I wish I could have done. I have moments where, you know, I'm talking to people and get really emotional that I wish I could have done more, wish I could have been there longer, you know, wish for a lot of things with that team, with that organization. You know, I think now being able to go back and I think I took a year off before I really went back to a game, you know, after retiring and finally went back and, you know, got noticed quite a bit walking around and was put on TV, and that was, you know, that made me feel pretty good about everything. And it feels good to go back. It feels good to watch. Just as I'm sure it is, you know, we went to a Ranger game a couple weeks ago and brought your daughters, and that was,
yeah,
you know, it's got to be an unbelievable feeling to do that.
Yeah, so. It is. Obviously, it takes you back to, you know, years of commitment and ups and downs, but yeah. There's so much joy in that and but also a lot of gratitude, you know, yeah. The fact that you got to experience that,
yeah,
you know, and it makes me smile every time I walk back in there and again, you think of the teammates, you think about the games, mm-hmm. And how lucky you were to that you had that opportunity,
especially in New York.
Yeah, especially in New York for an amazing franchise. So I'm happy to hear that you know, enjoy going back there, see the field, and just feel a lot of happiness and gratitude, yeah. because it was a great run. I it was cool. Yeah. It was cool to watch. But so next chapter for you now, like what's important to you today? What makes you happy? Obviously baseball pushed you, it guided you through life, gave you meaning probably.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's important today.
That was, as you know, it's when you do something your entire life, you kind of, when you finish, you feel a little lost, you know, at least for me anyways, I feel, obviously jumped into commercial real estate pretty quick, working for Newmark and, have certain weeks where I feel like I'm starting to get things. And then I have weeks where I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
I didn't go to college for this, or I didn't learn this. I wasn't around this very often, and you feel, I guess, a little intimidated like I said, lost. But I think with that being said, if I had taken a year off, 2 years off from not doing anything, I don't think I would have been in New York, because I probably would have spent too much money, not working, and would have ended up having to move somewhere else. And now that I've really put my foot in and tried something new and still have those weeks where I feel like I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Wow. That's going to be a lifelong thing, right? Because there's always more to learn.
But I can be in New York. I can be here. I can take clients to Mets games. I can come to MSG. And, MSG has meant so much to me over the years. Come to watch you, come to watch the Knicks. And they've been so gracious to give me tickets, over the last 12 years. It's a special place, Like you said, I have memories of getting standing ovations at MSG, which as a kid you never would think of, especially when you don't play there.
For me personally, like I realize having a team around you is obviously something that I really appreciate, playing a team sport. I always had that. Now I'm kind of creating my own team, in a way.
Jay, you and Jay, you got a nice little doubles team.
Yeah, we do.
No, but, I really focus a lot now since I retired on try to have fun and meet people, and it makes me happy. And the also the flexibility.
Right.
Our schedule was pretty tough, but talk your schedule, the amount of games and travel, do you see that as a great opportunity now, not being locked in by the schedule and meet more people? And
it's also a learning curve as well, because you think you have all this free time and then you have to still think like I have an actual job and need to stay focused on that and whatnot. But I think this past summer being able to enjoy 4th of July for the first time in 15 years probably. I think it was about two weeks ago when spring training started, I woke up in panic one day and I'm like, I'm not prepared. I'm late. So I still have that baseball, 8 month schedule still in the back of my mind, but having that freedom, to actually enjoy, my 30s and, not be so stuck and so regimented in an 8 month schedule plus the off season of, training a lot and eating properly. It's definitely nice. So I'm still getting used to it, but.
Yeah. Again, you're pretty fresh out of retirement here. I'm going on year three now, I think.
Has it been that long?
I think 3 years. Jeez. But I feel like every year you start to find a better balance and things. Okay, I want to spend even more time doing that. I want to spend less time doing that. But again, you were still learning, and especially being so fresh out of retirement, I guess you have to be a little bit patient too with that process.
Yeah. And that navigation for you, Hanky, like it's been 3 years now. Like, do you find mentors? We talk a lot about like networking and meeting people. Like, what's the best advice you'd give Harv as he starts his second chapter?
Well, there's a few things that I focus on that, this is important for me to be happy, but also to be inspired. Try kind of figure out what that is. Because hockey was the one thing that was so obvious that I never had to ask myself that question.
Right. It was easy. Just come natural.
Yeah, it was easy. But now take moments to like, okay, doing those things really makes me happy. I want to do more of that. And then to your question on mentors, like I have a lot of great people around me that I'm learning a lot of things from, but also realizing every meeting it is an opportunity to, you know,
to grow,
but yeah, also the connecting part in New York City is so amazing because there's so many great people here.
Yeah.
So I learn a lot from all these meetings, sometimes at MSG, but sometimes it's elsewhere. Yeah. And I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But also try to be patient with it. I had the hockey part kind of figure out the schedule wise and how to prepare. And now it's like I'm still learning and just try to be patient with that process.
You get two little girls, so that's you have that scheduling going on as
He's exactly. The bus driver now.
I know.
Take them to school, pick them up and activities and but for me balance is key. Mm-hmm. Right, with family, friends, work.
Yeah.
I guess that's a constant battle, right? For to sure. find that balance, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think being able to like meet new people, evolve, learn.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the reason I loved living in New York during the off season and not going to, Arizona or Florida and being surrounded by. Just baseball continuously throughout a year. I enjoyed going to dinners with you and our group of friends here because everyone did something different and you could hear, you could learn, you could grow, you could, hear different aspects of life versus just the baseball sports bubble.
Yeah.
And that's kind of helped me move into the career that I'm in now is the, networking, the learning, the growing, it's still, like you said, still everything's still challenging and a learning process, but having that background of branching out while I was playing, is definitely paying off as well.
Question for each one of you guys. So it's easy to like compile highlight reels and guess what your New York City moment might be. But I'd love to hear like a behind the scenes moment that, when you knew New York was special, whether it's related to hockey or baseball or kind of tangential to hockey or baseball. Is there any one moment where you're like, wow, like that was cool?
I've got one with both of you that I thought was, I think McEnroe was there too. I think we were at your old apartment playing music at one point, a couple years, well, quite a few years ago now. And,
the late night, the after party? Yeah. Is that what we're talking about? Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. During your off season. I think hopefully during both of our off seasons.
It was that magic week where neither one of you guys
neither
were
one
playing.
Of us were doing anything.
For the record.
I remember that, pretty incredibly, but just sitting there next to you and McEnroe and a new friend who I, loved to death and whatnot. It was that was a pretty incredible moment, but baseball moment, I'll get to that after you give yours.
I felt like already a couple weeks in moving here, I knew this was a special place. And I one of the first nights I really went out in New York City and I was out with Mouse, our buddy Mouse.
Yeah.
And back in the day, Bungalow 8.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was the club.
Earlier than me, I've heard many stories.
On 27th Street, it's not there anymore. But I remember going out, and me and Mouse, we tried to get in, and I think we tipped the bouncer Disco.
Disco, he's
still
around. Yeah,
Disco, if you're listening, I'd love to see you out there. But anyways, we got in, and we were probably there for just 15 minutes, and just the people watching it was just a unique place in New York City at the time. We're talking 2005. And 15 minutes later, we just got a big hand on our shoulders, like, you two, get out. And I felt like, okay, I'm in New York, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
I have to work a little harder. We were still in training camp my first year, so I still had to earn my stripes. But it was kind of welcome to New York moment already the first few weeks in. I'll never forget that story. It was
it's perfect.
Yeah.
Up and down real quick.
Yeah. That's funny. There's one I look back on pretty much, you know, anytime there's a Subway series. I think it was in 15. My whole family was down. We were playing at Yankee Stadium, and it was a day game. And, you know, I went out, and I think I went 8 2/3, and struck out pretty much everyone, and, you know, pitched a really, really amazing game. And like I said before, that, you know, Yankees versus Mets and Subway Series was baseball for me growing up. Like, that was it. And to do that at Yankee Stadium and go out and shove, as I'd like to say, it was, you know, one of those New York moments where, you know, you knew everyone in New York was pretty much watching that game, you know. And then, you know, obviously it's a day game. I think it was midweek. So my family wanted to stick around and not go sit in traffic on 95 back to Mystic for 6 hours. So they asked me, you know, can we set up dinner somewhere? In New York, it's not the easiest thing to do, but I had the clubhouse guy call, I think it was Tutorial Contro in Queens. I haven't been there in a long time, so I got to end up going back. But I think there was six of us, my grandfather, my grandmother, my parents. I don't know if my aunt and uncle were there, but anyways, we get set up. We're heading over, and we walk in, and every single person in the restaurant stood up and gave me a standing clapping ovation.
Wow.
And, you know, that's a moment where you're, you know, you walk into I'm an Italian citizen now, so it's nice to walk into, you know, an Italian restaurant that's been there for a long time in New York and kind of a New York Queen staple, and have the entire restaurant stand up and give you a standing ovation.
That's
it was
awesome.
Like, wow, this is really cool.
That's amazing.
That was something I'll never forget.
I love that. That's awesome.
So,
for me, my memory's so bad. I'm trying to think back of, obviously there's games and moments at the Garden that I remember, but just what's the strongest in me right now is retirement night.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, when they retire my jersey, it's still so fresh for me and just to have so many friends, family there, and it was emotional and exciting, and so that's probably my favorite moment. But I remember so many playoff games we won in overtime, and that feeling, you know, and you're so on edge, and everything is on the line, and to win those games, that's what you miss.
Yeah,
you know, that rush. Oh my goodness.
For sure.
You take moments here and there to think back of them,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you smile, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I've been super fortunate to share in a ton of those moments with both of you guys. And, you know, Harv, just super grateful for your friendship. I'm grateful we can continue making memories together.
For sure.
I'm excited to see what the next year or two brings for both of you. So.
Yeah, let's keep...
Let's keep making
keep growing and keep learning, and we'll see where we end up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, Harv.
For sure.
Yeah, buddy.
It was awesome.
Sure.
And
an honor.
Let's grab a drink soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe maybe in Queens. That place sounds tasty.
It's delicious. It's delicious. But it's been an honor. Seriously. Right. Really
thanks,
appreciate
bud.
It.
Yeah, I love you, brother.
Yeah, love you too.
Thanks to our buddy Matt Horvey for joining us here today at Club 30. Takeaways, Jay?
I mean, it can't go wrong hanging out with one of your best friends. So
it really felt like a club today. Like,
it really did.
We know Matt really well, going back, you know, 10, 12 years. And it's a new chapter now.
Yeah.
Baseball is behind him, but I hope he can reflect on his time in New York. And again, I was touching on it a little bit when we were talking about it, that I hope it brings him a big smile.
Yeah, me too. I think he has all the right ingredients down, right? I think that what brought us all together was the electricity of New York, you know, and being able to make it your own a little bit. And so I'm super excited that he's still here. and growing and learning, and yeah, it's going to be a challenging future. You know, like being in the corporate world is a lot different, but
you know, being in sports, you know exactly where you're going.
Yeah,
you have a plan from the age of seven. Like I know exactly where I want to go. I have my dreams. It's going to guide me to that place, hopefully. But now, moving away from sports again, I've done it for 3 years. And Matt is going on year two, right?
Yeah.
But not really knowing where you're going. Yeah. It's both fun and scary at times.
Yeah.
But I enjoy that.
Sure.
The unknown.
Absolutely.
For so long, you knew exactly where you were going.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I guess that would be my advice for Matt, just to embrace that, not really know.
Yeah, that's the scariest part, and it's usually the compass where you're supposed to go, right? The scary part. But yeah, what? Just really, it's always lovely to hang with you, one of your good friends, and you know, Matt is. He has a heart of gold, man. He is just the most generous human being in the city. And you know, I have so many great memories of him bringing my mom to the ballpark for Mother's Day game, and you know, just like he always thinks about the needs of everybody else. And that's going to really serve him well, right? Because he's authentic and he is who he is, and he's not trying to put a costume on and pretend to be somebody he's not. So. He's going to be great in the professional world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this show. It was great for us to sit down and catch up with Matt, and see you guys soon.
Yeah, for more Club 30 content, you can follow us on socials, YouTube, and we're always streaming on MSG Network. So come check us out for new content, new episodes.
Have a great week, guys.